hearing from you, Jonathan, is that, you know, there's these two priorities, but it's not merely just pulling up Google Maps and closing your eyes and clicking on a particular location and saying, this is exactly where we are going. Here are the priorities, but it does take strategizing, planning, looking at church budgets, all of these sort of back end, sort of behind the scenes administrative aspects of actually doing this. So if you could just speak on maybe some of the legwork, not necessarily all the you don't have to go into all the details now, but just sort of work us through that. There is a lot of legwork that goes on behind the scenes before you take a qualified man and his family and helicopter them into somewhere, right?
Yeah. And I think obviously every church, when it comes to those priorities, you know, what I didn't mention was where exactly are they doing this? Some churches define their priorities in terms of a geographic focus. And there's some benefit to that, you know, in the sense of if you've got your missionaries on one continent, you can visit them easier as if they're spread out over the whole world. So Countryside has not taken that approach, partially because historically we've just had missionaries in a variety of places. So when you have a qualified individual that has been trained and they're going to be sent from the church, obviously, a huge part of that process is where are they going and what specifically will they be doing and who will they be doing it with? Mm-hmm. You know, ideally, you're sending people to be part of a team so that they're not just by themselves out there, but they're with others for both the support and encouragement and just the various gifts that are helpful in accomplishing the task of church planning and pastoral training or other things. And so, you know, we want to participate in that process with them while also recognizing the Lord's going to direct in his providence through relationships that person may have, relationships we may have. So we want to be involved in that conversation early on. A lot of churches, you know, someone comes and says, hey, here's what I'm going to do. Will you support me? And the missions leadership says either yes or no. We want to handle that more as a collective process. So when somebody's interested in missions, we want to walk through that with them, determining what is a good fit for them and their gifts, what is a good fit for their family, what are the relationships and opportunities. So, you know, we sent out a missionary family last summer. And they had a strong desire to be in India. That was where they were focused on looking. We had, I participated in some conversations with possible ministry partners there, working through logistics of what that would look like. It ended up not being a fit for a variety of reasons, age of their kids, school opportunities, just a number of things. And so they began to look at other avenues and opportunities, had some relationships in another country that has significant need. And so they ended up investigating those opportunities, found a place that was a good fit. We were a part of those conversations, but we were not heavy-handed saying, here's where you have to go because our priorities are we only go to these two countries and so you got to be in these two countries. No, we want to be more flexible than that. At the same time, we want to participate in seeing people make wise decisions, and we want to be a part of that. And obviously, in that are things like financial support and other things that we can get into more. But I think being a part of that process and conversation and really educating your people early on so that the priorities that God has given that our church wants to support are really the priorities that are throughout your congregation. You know, I think it's been neat over the years to see our whole congregation gain a clearer perspective of what are the priorities and missions and what are we about and why. And so when you start to see not just the leadership understanding these priorities, not just those who are interested in missions understanding these priorities, but you start to see the congregation as a whole saying, yeah, that's what we should be about, then the people who are interested in missions from your church, mm-hmm. what are they going to be passionate about? Well, they're going to be passionate about those things because they've been well taught that this is what the Bible calls us to. But the leadership team or elders ought to be a part of that process from early on. Obviously, there's people that missionaries we support who are not sent from Countryside. We'll talk more about that mm-hmm. later on as well. So that's a different dynamic and relationship, but their local church, their sending church and elders should be involved in that process with them as well. And again, that's something that an agency can play a helpful role in. So choosing an agency is another significant decision for a missionary. And I think that's something, again, the missions leadership and elder, multiple elders, should be a part of that process with missionaries we're going to send, helping them to evaluate what's a good fit for them, what's an agency that's going to serve their needs well and connect them with others who are like-minded in that focus and approach. And so that's all things that, you know, as missions leadership team, we don't dictate every decision, but we want to be a part of that. And we've just seen the missionaries we're going to send out are really thankful for that. You know, they want that. They embrace the fact that we serve under the oversight of our elders, and that's a blessing. It's not a, it doesn't mean we don't get to do what we want to do. It means we've got a team of godly people helping us to think through this who are invested with us. And so they appreciate that, and they really value that input. And I think that's part of that confirmation process, you know, people who want that input. You know, if somebody just wants to go here and do this regardless and they don't care what your elders think, that's a warning light that says, yeah, that's not the character that we're looking for. Again, if somebody who's super passionate about this and really eager to do this, but also values the input and confirmation of the elders, that's exactly who we want to send. Because they will be faithful, but they'll be responsive to the leadership as well, which is the goal.
Yeah, so we want to be faithful with the priorities, but we also want to be very practical. And, you know, we're wanting missions to succeed.
Yep.
And we're wanting to put people in the best situation possible. And a lot of that takes planning behind the scenes, weeks, months, maybe even years to get that off and running. But the idea is to be faithful to the priorities and then to be practical to put people in places and put them in opportunities where the Lord might use them.
Absolutely. We want them to be there long-term. Because this is the fulfillment of the Great Commission doesn't happen in a year or two. If you're going somewhere where you have to learn a language or possibly a second language, you have to learn a trade language to function in the country, and then another language that's the language of that unreached group that you're trying to plant a church in, that in itself is not a short process. And then you've got to build relationships. You've got to share the gospel. You've got to see the church established and strengthened, see the scriptures translate. I mean, this is a 15-ish year commitment kind of a thing. And so you want them to be able to do that and to do that well. And so there is an intentionality to say, what is a good, as best we can tell, what is a good fit for your giftedness and team so that you can thrive in what is a very difficult or in endeavor. And so like this family we sent last year, they're older than most typical missionaries going out. So they had older children, high school age, children, one in college. And so where their children could go to school while the mom and dad are learning the language was a very important factor in their longevity of being able to be on the field. Their kids needed to be in a place that was healthy for them, transitioning much later in life than what is often the case for those going into missions with younger children. And so that was a very strong practical consideration. And they're, again, they're older, so they're going somewhere where they can learn one language and function in that, not where there's a need to learn multiple languages. And all those things play into wise decisions, you know, who they're going to be partnered with, what kind of fit that is, do they work well together? All those things play a key role in the longevity of that missionary serving in that place. And all those things should be considered and talked through together.
Yeah, so you're saying we're going to enter into a relationship with someone for 15, 20 years, hopefully longer.
Yep.
That's a long time.
It is.
That's a lot of investment. There's a lot of moving parts over those couple decades of a relationship. So it's crucial then that we partner with the right people, right? Yep. That would be our hope and our goal long term, not enter into a partnership with someone on and send them out and 2 months later it ends up being a disaster for many reasons or on many levels. That could happen, but long term we're looking at 20-25 years. So let's talk about what it looks like to partner with someone. Who are we wanting to partner with, and why do we want to have certain criteria to help us navigate who we're going to enter into these long-term relationships with?
Absolutely. We want to be excited to bring on and send out new missionaries. We also want to be thoughtful in that process. Like you said, it's not something to enter into lightly. You know, biblically, it's important that we're careful who we partner with. You know, when John was writing 3 John, he said, you know, you want to support men so that you may be fellow workers with the truth. And 2 John obviously warns about partnering with those who are false teachers. So we want to be careful that the people we are partnering with are in fact faithfully representing Christ. But we also just want to see that partnership be one that is a good fit for our church in particular and for the relationship that the Lord's given. And so we have, you know, in addition to those priorities that help us to discern, are we going to consider somebody for mission support, for partnership? We also look at a number of other factors. You know, obviously the first of those is simply, are they biblically qualified for this role? You know, I think there's a lot of unique skills that can be very helpful in missions, linguistic ability, other things, ability to eat varieties of food, a flexible palate, I mean, all those things. But when you come back to what does the Bible say, missionaries that are planting churches or training pastors are really functioning in an elder role. And so we need to look at the qualifications for elders to say, does this person, this man, meet the biblical qualifications for an elder? Some missions roles are more deacon roles. I mentioned, you know, maybe you're a pilot or in another support kind of a role. And so the question needs to be, do they meet the biblical qualifications for the role that they are serving in? And that needs to be tested in the context of a local church. And so if we're going to send somebody out from Countryside, we want to be getting to know them, getting to discern their character, their giftedness, their ability to teach, their ability to lead, as demonstrated first in their own home, but then in the context of the church, so that we know this person is biblically qualified for the role that we would send them.
Yeah, so we're saying, yeah, you have to do your due diligence here, right? And there's only so much you can do. Yeah. I think of the apostles in Acts 8 with Simon, who had, you know, on the surface repented and believed, sure, and then, you know, ultimately walked away from the faith, right? He was in it for the wrong reasons. You can do your due diligence by laying out these qualifications, this criteria. That's what we're called to do.
Yep.
And then we let the Lord handle the rest of those things.
Absolutely. But it does take time to invest in and get to know someone. Obviously, we want to send missionaries who still have a lot of life and vitality left and can learn a language. So it's not that they have to be, older men, but they need to be men who are clearly on on a track of maturity and faithfulness in those ways. And I think, you know, again, that takes time and investment in the local church to get to know someone. So we want to send people who are elder qualified or biblically qualified. We also want to send those who are doctrinally aligned with us. You know, we view missionaries really as an extension of our church leadership functioning in another context. And so we want to send those who are like-minded with us doctrinally, who we have confidence in what they're going to teach and the kind of church they're going to establish. And so we want to make sure that there is a doctrinal agreement with our church, obviously with those we send out of Countryside and those from outside that we would connect with. And then a third thing that really drives the practical decision-making for us is we want to send missionaries who are Countryside connected, who have a relationship with our church. And this looks, you know, different, and we actually have a grid that the elders have put together to help the missions leadership team evaluate potential missionaries. And one of the axes of that grid is the priorities that we've established. Mm-hmm. And the other is really their relationship to Countryside. So we have missionaries for whom we are their sending church. They have been a part of our church. Our elders have primary responsibility for oversight of them, and we are sending them out. Some of those are homegrown, we call them. They grew up at Countryside. You know, they were equipped here. They maybe came to Christ, were trained in our youth group, college group. We track that not because it distinguishes how we support someone, but because we want to know, are we being faithful to teach and train in a way that encourages our young people to consider the work that the Lord may call them to in missions? We have some who we're their home church. They weren't necessarily homegrown. We're blessed to have a master's seminary distance campus, so there's quality men moving here to do seminary, and others who have come, you know, maybe already with a passion for missions, but a desire to get further training or to be here for a season before they're sent out. And so, again, a part of our church, evaluated in our church, equipped in our church, and sent out from Countryside.
Yeah, Jonathan. Yeah, let me back up to the doctrinal component.
Yeah.
So, would you say that in terms of understanding and finding out if they are doctrinally aligned with Countryside, does that come through several informal conversations, formal conversations? Are we asking them to read and understand our doctrinal statement? I mean, mm-hmm. What does that just look like practically?
Sure. So when we connect with a potential missionary, if they are from Countryside, they would have gone through our membership process at Countryside. In that process, they would have read our doctrinal statement, mm-hmm. distinction, distinctives, constitution, all those things, noted any difference. We have a missionary application for those who are outside our church that asks them to do the same thing. So there is them reading our doctrinal statement, affirming that or noting any differences. But then we do have interaction, face-to-face interaction, where we discuss those things as well. And generally, you know, we are also evaluating the person's sending church. So if we're going to support a missionary who's not from Countryside, we want to know what church are they from, and is that church doctrinally aligned with us as well? Knowing that we can't know everything about this individual, and we're ultimately trusting that church and their leadership to do the role that God's given them to do, while we can play a smaller role in the support of that missionary. And so that other sending church matters as well. So looking at those things, yeah, both individually and then what is their sending church, and to some degree, the team that they're going to partner with, what is the doctrinal agreement of that team as well. But
Yeah, that's helpful. Again, all of this is wrapped up in ecclesiology. We want to, you know, if we're going to support someone, we're going to send out missions, and it's going to be a 25-year endeavor. We want to make sure that, you know, we are faithfully stewarding the money that the brothers and sisters here at Countryside, you know, give either just generally to our church or directly towards missions.
And I think the other thing on doctrinal alignment, you know, not everyone who goes out as a missionary, just like any pastor or elder, is going to continue to grow in their understanding of doctrine and the scriptures. But oftentimes we can send somebody who is not yet fully clear in their doctrine, and they may think, well, I know the gospel. We know they're clear on the gospel, and they're going to share the gospel. And that's where that short-sightedness of not seeing the long-term goal that, well, if you go share the gospel, and we're thankful you can get the gospel right, but if you see people saved, what are you doing now? Well, you are training them, and you are now establishing a church, or you ought to be. And so you need to be at a level of doctrinal understanding and agreement that you can not only start the process of missions well, but that you can see that through. And I think that's where, in our zeal sometimes to send missionaries, we can maybe not do all the training and equipping doctrinally on the front end because we're just in a hurry to get, or they're in a hurry to get to the field. And again, we don't want to drag it out indefinitely, but we do want to see them equipped not only to share the gospel initially, but to see and train and lead a healthy church long term. And so that's something that, again, I think we've seen the importance of over the years, and try to be careful to send those who don't just check the box that I affirm this doctrine and this doctrinal statement, I don't have any difference, but that really understand and can defend that doctrine, because that's what they're going to need to do on the field. So it's not just, yeah, I think I agree with your doctrinal statement. It's I have thought about and studied and biblically come to the same convictions as where you are.
Now, to send people out and to support them weekly, monthly, yearly, this isn't free, right?
No.
There are finances that are involved and need to be a regular thing in the missions world to support those we send out. So let's discuss what it looks like from a financial standpoint to maybe raise money, generate money. What does that whole world of finances look like in this conversation?
Are you thinking more from the missionary side, or as we think about that from
a church? From the missionary side.
Yeah, so a missionary who's going to go to the field and serve for an extended period of time, generally they're going to be financially supported by others and in individuals and churches. There are times where believers have an opportunity to work in another country. They can be a part of what the Lord is doing. But if you're going to see a church planted, see the scriptures translated, you really need to have focused time and not be devoting a lot of time to work. And so that missionary is going to go through a process of support raising. Again, we want to help those that we are sending. We want to start with Countryside's evaluation, affirmation of them, and support. And so part of what Countryside does and what most churches will do if they're sending someone is they will commit a regular monthly amount to that missionary. Mm-hmm. That may vary depending on church size. It may vary depending on other factors as well. But that's going to be a starting point. And then the goal would be that they are going to connect with other churches that are like-minded. We will do things to help our missionaries, like, you know, maybe Tom will write a letter of recommendation, and they can include that when they contact like-minded churches so they know You know, that they're sent from countryside and we're vouching for them and engage, and they're going to connect with other individuals. Some of those will be in the process in our own church or others that they know. So it's a mix of relationships we have as a church and relationships they have as an individual that are working towards getting that support. And primarily in that support, we're talking ongoing monthly support to keep them there long-term. Missionaries also are raising generally one-time support to get them there. So there's the ongoing needs to stay there, and there's, you know, shipping stuff to another part of the world, building a house if you're going to live in a jungle, or buying a car and the plane tickets to get your family there the first time. So there's one-time needs that can be contributed to if someone's not in a position to commit long-term, but really a primary need for longer-term ongoing support for them.
Yeah, no, this next part will probably be the most listened to part of this series, but what does it look like to have a missions budget? Well, in terms of what we do here at Countryside, should there be a missions budget? Should that be in sort of the equation when we're talking about finances and stewarding?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think given the priority of the Great Commission, it's right that that priority is reflected in the church budget. And so, yeah, absolutely. A portion of our general fund budget is designated towards missions, towards missionaries. The vast majority of that budget at Countryside is going to individual missionaries for regular ongoing monthly support. We have some other things in that budget to help short-term trips or leadership visits or different things like that, but it's primarily about financially supporting missionaries. So part of what anybody gives to Countryside is going to missions and to that that support of missionaries. That's not the only way that we support missionaries. So we also have a benevolence fund that people in our church give to meet physical needs of people, and we have a ministry benevolence fund, we call it, that's more to meet ministry needs of organizations, and so we can oftentimes do some special projects or support for missionaries through other things outside of our missions budget. But that's a primary thing that we are committed to doing. And so we are evaluating missionaries in light of the financial limitations that we have. And again, I think this is something that churches have to decide how they're going to balance that. You know, it's hard to tell good people no. So some churches support a whole lot of missionaries, but because of the financial limitations, they don't support them a lot. And we've chosen at Countryside to say, if we're going to financially support you, either sent from Countryside or from another church, we want to make a significant enough financial contribution to you to be helpful and to be an encouragement and to foster the kind of relationship that we want as well. We're not going to provide all your support. We don't want all your eggs in one basket, and we don't want to be that limited in the number of missionaries that we can support. But we do want to provide real meaningful support that doesn't look the same for every missionary. It does depend on, you know, if we're their sending church, we're going to start them at a higher level of support than if we're not. But we want to support all of our missionaries with, we want to do that well. And so in our budget, we budget specific amounts for individual missionaries. Those are reviewed and submitted to the elders as a part of our regular annual budgeting process. And so that is fixed. And then we budget some contingency money, we call it. And so we have money set aside every year so that we can add missionaries, or we can meet unique needs that come up in the year for missionaries from our general fund. Because we've been in a position to be able to do that. You know, we also at times have missionaries on the back end of their ministry coming off. And so we're able to take what was given in support to them and transition that to new missionaries as well. So we try to plan ahead. You know, if we know we're in process with a missionary from Countryside or another church, we'll go ahead and work that into our budget to the best that we can. And we've been blessed to have, very supportive elders and a very generous church who's eager for that kind of support for missionaries.
Well, it's helpful on the leadership side of things to have this type of organization in terms of finances, but it's also helpful on the missionary side of things because they know when they are on another continent that they can expect, you know, X amount to be here this month or X amount that month. So they can also begin to strategically plan for not only just their life in general, personal life, but even as they're looking to do work, gospel ministry.
Absolutely.
So it's just helpful again to have a plan in place, a strategy in place, organization, and all of those things. I think that goes back to why the levels of and layers of leadership is absolutely crucial, especially to nail down some of these finer details that you've mentioned. So that's just a general thumb sketch of what it looks like financially in terms of what we're doing here at Countryside to raise support. So let's talk about a process for evaluating potential missionaries. So someone comes into Countryside, maybe they've been attending for a few months, or maybe it's been a couple years, and they are under the conviction and understanding that the Lord is directing them to the missions world. So if they want to get their foot in the door and begin the process, what does it look like to begin evaluating that whole idea?
You bet. Yeah, and I think that's where the New Testament model of equipping and evaluating leadership still applies in missions. And so if somebody comes to our church and you know, from day one, they have a desire for missions, or you know, we took some college students to a missionary conference a couple weeks ago, and there's some of the young men in that group who are expressing a desire for missions. We want to give them a path for how to grow and mature and discern their giftedness as they consider whether that is indeed something that they're excited to pursue, and we're excited to partner with them in that way. So, you know, a lot of that is the same thing that any believer needs to be equipped for the work of ministry in our church, or to be equipped for leadership, you know, their own personal growth and devotion to Christ. The length of time that they've been a believer, you know, there's a reason we're called to not lay hands on someone too hastily. And so, you know, to have the opportunity to mature both in their biblical and theological understanding and in their character. You know, if they're married, what's the health of their marriage? You know, there's a lot of stressors on family on the field and, you know, their parenting. And so just the general discipleship and equipping that we want to see any believer have is important. Once those, you know, or as those things are being developed, we also want to try to discern giftedness. You know, most missionaries need to be able to teach. That's an elder qualification, and it's a key role in what they're going to be doing. Again, it may look very different than what it looks like in our home church, but they need to be able to study and understand the scriptures and communicate those things clearly. And so we have some various processes in place, teaching practicums and cohorts where we can give people opportunities to teach, opportunities to grow as teachers. So somebody who's interested in missions, we're going to encourage that as well, so that we can discern something of their giftedness and they can discern something of their giftedness to know what kinds of things would be a good fit as we evaluate all of those things in their life, their character and their gifts. You know, once somebody is really clearly committed and gifted for that, or you know, they're close enough to that. You know, we're blessed to have a seminary distance campus on our church here, and so we can work with them to see if seminary is a possibility, an option for them, practically, and try to help in that. And we offer internships at Countryside through our partnership with XL Ministries. And so oftentimes there's an opportunity, and we would encourage or expect someone to do a couple-year missions internship. Again, it's not all about missions. It's about learning and growing in the context of the local church, because that's what they need. They need to know how to minister to people, and how to teach, and how to counsel, and how leadership functions, and how to shepherd, and all the things that, again, may look different. Hospital visit in another part of the world, that may look different, but caring for those who are suffering is a part of leadership and a part of ministry. And so we want to help them to develop their giftedness and experience. We do have things in a missions internship that are more specifically focused on missions, both evangelism and understanding issues in missions, and things that we want to make sure that they're thinking carefully about, and we've been able to talk through with them before we would then go through a more formal ordination process to send them to the field. So it's, you know, in some ways, it's not a short process. You know, you're talking years, not months, but we want to be intentional in that process to help people to know what is the next step and how do you continue to demonstrate faithfulness in the church. And that's ultimately the best thing a person can do, is demonstrate faithfulness in the church. We want to send people to do what they're already doing. Again, it may look different, but we want to send people who are faithful and committed in those ways.